2 Corinthians 3:11 in the New Living Translation states, yes, we live under constant danger of death. So we live in the face of death. Today, along with Tarrant County, we show appreciation for emergency workers, first responders, police, fire, and ambulance workers. Often, first responders are called to put their lives on the line, to face significant risk. They might well relate to Paul's acknowledgement that he lived under constant danger of death. What could possibly motivate someone to continually put their life in harm's way? What purpose justifies living in the face of death? The firefighter takes a deep breath before charging into a blazing building. Certainly, life is a risk. Not long ago, even just walking on the roof of a burning building in Listowel cost the life of a volunteer firefighter. What motivated OPP Constable Vu Pham to stare down the barrel of a gun before meeting an untimely death and leaving a widow with a young family? Was it just for money? A mere paycheck? I doubt it. There are safer ways of earning income. What caused Constable David Mouncey to hurry to the scene of an accident when roads were icy and treacherous? Was it so he could get his name posthumously on a bridge dedicated in his honor? I very much doubt it. Yvonne and I drove across that bridge coming back from across the states. Why would ambulance workers and paramedics dare to intervene when people's lives are hanging by a thread and could go either way? Don't they know their care becomes a vital part of the outcome? That they're incurring responsibility to some degree if the person doesn't make it? Who wants that hanging over your head? Then there are the less adrenaline-filled aspects of the job. One of my first churches was next door to the ambulance base in Richards Landing on St. Joseph Island. One day a church board member who was also a full-time ambulance worker gave me a tour of the base. Very modest base. The office was nothing impressive, kind of cramped actually. And I started to realize how many hours are spent just waiting for a call to come in. That must get very tedious. I don't know if I could stand all those hours of waiting. That too would be demanding, but it's all part of the package, the sacrifice in order to save lives. But first responders are not the only ones who live in the face of death or have to endure severe hardships. Paul talks in verses 8 and 9 about being hard-pressed, perplexed, struck down. How many believers could relate to those terms in other lines of work or even just in parenting, in school or college? Why should believers tackle any difficult task for that matter? Why not just take the easy out? In 2 Corinthians 4, we discover Paul's reasons for sticking it out during apostolic ministry. These can motivate us and inform our own hard situations. The coat of arms of the Ontario Provincial Police bears the motto Servitute Clariores, which means more illustrious through serving. Or you could put it, when you serve, you shine. Serving others is a big consideration for first responders. 2 Corinthians 4:5 says, for we do not preach ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, and ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. The apostles were conscious of wanting to serve others. Verse 1, since through God's mercy we have this ministry. 3:3, God has made us competent as ministers of a new covenant. 3:8, will not the ministry of the Spirit be even more glorious? The Greek root here, diakonos, or diakonia, refers to a servant, a waiter, waitress, someone who waits on another in order to serve them. So as Paul sees it, we are your servants for Jesus' sake. But why serve? Why not just play it safe? Aren't there a slew of other occupations in which you can serve people without having to constantly put your life on the line? Note the little phrase, for Jesus' sake. Through, because of, for this reason, for this cause, on account of Jesus. How did Jesus serve us sinners? By going all the way to the cross to lay down his righteous life as an atoning sacrifice for our sinfulness. Jesus went all out and stopped at nothing in order that you might be put right with God. Shameful and bent, warped as may be all the sinful evil deeds you've ever done. We serve for Jesus' sake because he first served us. Note how Paul introduces the servanthood idea by the start of verse 5. For we do not preach ourselves, but Jesus Christ as your Lord, and ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. We serve because Jesus is our Lord. He's boss. He died so that we might no longer live for ourselves, but for Him who died for us and was raised again. We're no longer our own. We've been bought with a price. We belong to Him. We're completely at His disposal as Lord. How are you serving others for Christ's sake? Too often the world entices us to serve ourselves instead. Acknowledging Jesus as Master helps us keep perspective. It's not about us. He's redeemed us for a larger purpose beyond our own self-interest. George Bush said, "The definition of a successful life must include serving others." William Williman of Duke University tells about a young woman named Anne, who was a member of his congregation. Anne attended pharmacy school and from time to time came home and worshipped with her parents. One Sunday evening after one of her visits, Will received a telephone call from Anne's father. "You know what's happened?" he asked. "Anne just called to say she has decided to drop out of pharmacy school." "Really?" Will said. "What on earth is leading her to do a thing like that?" "Well, we're not sure," he said. "We thought maybe you could talk some sense into her." Professor Willeman went to meet with her. He reminded Anne of all her hard work and her achievements and how she should think carefully before throwing all this away. "How in the world did you come to this decision?" he asked her. She answered, "It was your sermon yesterday that started me thinking. You said that God has something important for each of us to do in our own way. I thought to myself, I'm not here because I want to serve God. I'm here to get a job, to make money, to look out for myself." Then I remembered the good summer I spent working with the church literacy program among the migrant workers' kids. I really was serving God then. So I decided, after your sermon, to go back there and give my life to helping those kids. There was a long silence, and finally Will said, "Now look, Anne, I was just preaching." She caught the divine drift. The second reason some choose to live under constant danger of death is to give expression to God's saving, delivering power in time of crisis. We can do a certain amount in our own strength. Emergencies force us to rely upon God for help when things are beyond our control. He delights to work through our meager efforts and save lives and souls in a way that moves us to worship His greatness. Paul the Apostle knew hard times most of the time. His life was certainly no picnic. Verses 8 to 10a. "We are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus." Now, right after this comes a little purpose clause, grammatically speaking, that suggests why he would put up with all that. And he repeats it for emphasis, verses 10 and 11. "So that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our bodies. For we who are alive are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake. So that purpose phrase again, so that His life may be revealed in our mortal body." In other words, Paul is saying, we put up with such hardships because it gives Jesus' own life opportunity to show up and be seen in the midst of our otherwise crushing circumstances. A couple of other times in this letter, Paul details further his extreme trials. Chapter 6, verses 4 to 10 mentions troubles, hardships, distresses, beatings, imprisonments, riots, hard work, sleepless nights, hunger, bad report, dying, sorrowful, poor. Oh, compared to that, my life's a piece of cake. Can you relate to something in that list? Sleepless nights, maybe? Poor, sorrowful? Troubles that seem beyond your power to cope? Call on Jesus for the extra strength you need. Chapter 11, verses 23 to 27, goes into more detail about Paul's beatings, imprisonment, stonings, shipwrecks, and danger from enemies. Such pressures make him feel as weak and fragile, according to verse 4 verse 7, is a common clay pot to the very ordinariness of the vessel God is using, highlights the strength that sustains Paul has come from beyond himself. 4 verse 7 says, let's read this one together. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. So when things seem to be going to pot for you this coming week, remember, pot, jars of clay. That's me, I'm a jar of clay. God's power flow through. Paul Prost played 16 years with the Minnesota Vikings and was inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame. However, his greatest challenge in life did not occur on a football field, but in his response to the automobile accident his wife of 35 years suffered in 1995. Pam Prost was in a coma for 5 years after suffering a brain stem injury and several broken bones on the left side of her body, including facial bones, ribs, pelvis, and vertebrae. A former Vikings teammate said, I've gained so much more respect and admiration for Paul over the past 2 years for what Paul has done as a husband, father, and provider for Pam. He has proven himself a true Hall of Famer based on how he has handled everything. Prost credits his strength to his faith in God. He says, when the doctors tell you they do not know if she will live, that is not giving you any hope. But I never thought she would die. That is my belief in God, hoping that he would give me strength through all of it. So, we can endure in the face of danger of death because, first of all, we serve others for Jesus' sake. Second, it allows God's saving power to shine through, despite our own weakness. And third, hope in resurrection glory. Before you enter a burning building as a firefighter or confront an armed criminal as a police officer, it's probably a good idea to develop some convictions about death and the afterlife. If you believe this life is all there is, why let your one opportunity for existence and enjoyment be snuffed out needlessly? Paul was whipped with 39 lashes 5 times, beaten with rods 3 times, shipwrecked 3 times, I think once would have been enough for me, and stoned once. Yet survived. It was miraculous. He was a walking testimony to God's amazing ability to keep someone alive when there was a task to accomplish. Paul could face such near-death treatment because he had resolved in his soul that physical death would not be the end. Better things awaited him. He trusted in God, so kept testifying. Verses 13 and 14. With that same spirit of faith, we also believe and therefore speak because, here's another one of those purpose words here. Why? We know that the one who raised the Lord Jesus from the dead will also raise us with Jesus and present us with you in his presence. Paul had met the risen Christ on the road to Damascus, Acts 9. There was zero doubt in his mind that God has power to raise people from the dead or to give them new glorified spiritual bodies after this life is over. He'd seen it. 1 Corinthians 15:42. So it will be with the resurrection of the dead. The body that's sown in dishonor is raised in glory. Sown in weakness is raised in power. Sown in natural body is raised a spiritual body. If there is a natural body, there is also a spiritual body. The cemetery is not the end of the line. Judgment and condemnation await those who reject God. According to 2 Thessalonians 1:9, those who don't obey the gospel, will be punished with everlasting destruction and shut out from the presence of the Lord and from the majesty of his power. That's not where you want to be. Christians will be rewarded for their deeds. 2 Corinthians 5:10 says, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive what is due him for the things done while in the body, whether good or bad. As Paul states in 2 Corinthians 4:17, for our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory far outweighs them all. Far outweighs. Believers are blessed to share in God's glory, God's beauty and honor, both now in this life and more in the life to come. Our theme this month is taken from Colossians 1:27. Christ in you, the hope of glory. The end of 2 Corinthians 3 is for today's text, the verse Chris started with when he read. Paul wrote, where are we here? Oh, we missed it. There. And we, who with unveiled faces all reflect the Lord's glory, are being transformed into His likeness with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. Yes, the Lord is primarily glorious, but believers reflect His glory, being changed by degrees to be like Him, resemble Him, so we display ever-increasing glory in ourselves, which comes from Him. Then, after this life, Paul encourages us by saying, this life's troubles are producing for us a glory that vastly outweighs them and will last forever. Sounds like a good deal. The blessings then will be disproportionately greater than the burdens we bear now. But it's not primarily about us or getting glory for ourselves. I suspect if you could pull aside that police officer, that ambulance driver, that firefighter, ask them as they're about to risk their life one more time why they do what they do, many of them, Christian or not, would say simply, because it's the right thing to do. As in, it would be wrong to just stand aside and let evil, destruction, or disease have its way when we could step in and prevent it. God has created humans in His image, His likeness, with a sense of right and wrong, of moral values, what we call conscience. 2 Corinthians 4:2, by setting forth the truth plainly, we commend ourselves to every one man's conscience in the sight of God. So we come hardwired with a sense of oughtness, Romans 2, since they show the requirements of the law written on their hearts, their conscience is also bearing witness, and their thoughts now accusing, now even defending them. An atheist or secular humanist may have a hard time explaining where this sense of right and wrong comes from. Logically, for the Darwinist or materialist, as for Adolf Hitler, might makes right. Those of super race ought to lord it over those who are weaker. This is really profound. But Christians acknowledge a God to whom all must one day give account. Because God is our creator and judge, He deserves foremost glory and honor. It's all from Him. Verse 6, the light that shines in a believer is the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ. God's glory. Verse 15, the grace reaching more and more people will cause thanksgiving to overflow to the glory of God. Paul tells the church in 1 Corinthians 10:31. Let's read this last one all together here. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. So what's your reason in doing anything? For God, glory of God. That's right. That's our fundamental purpose. Glorifying Him. Showing Him to be great as He is. Acknowledging and praising and drawing attention to His goodness, excellence, majesty, and beauty. A major attribute of God is His righteousness or justice. In 3:8, Paul calls the New Testament ministry of the Spirit the ministry that brings righteousness. So when a first responder is moved to get involved, put themselves in danger to protect a member of the public, when they feel in their gut that it would be wrong for them to back away and let evil or injustice get the upper hand, whether they realize it or not, they're resonating with the righteousness that is at the core of God's being, this saving, delivering power that loves people and reaches out to help us. Getting near the end. Faith and the firefighter. And an online article titled, Why Faith is Important to Firefighters, Andy Starnes points out that the trust required by members of that profession in their gear and their leaders on the job and challenges them to extend faith beyond such temporal factors to one on whom their lives ultimately depend. Starnes writes, as firefighters, we each place confidence in one another and our leaders as we serve in the most dangerous environments. We place faith in our PPE, that is, personal protective equipment, that's been tested to endure the extremely volatile environments that we boldly go into. We place faith in our SCBA, I had to look that one up, self-contained breathing apparatus, that it has been tested and will perform when we enter into places where no one could breathe without it. We place faith in the hands of our drivers as we stretch a hose towards a fire, that when we open the nozzle, the water we need will be there. Let us ask ourselves again, do we have faith? Consider the examples given and look upon our lives from a faith-based perspective. If we as firefighters can place such trust and belief into the hands of another person, our fellow firefighter, and such great faith into the hands of our leaders who faithfully watch over us through the flames of fire, then is it too big of a leap for us to place our trust into the hands of the one who made us? That's true.